Sacred Lord Mother, come to me. Make my way sacred, fill me with beauty. Sacred Lord Mother, come to me. Make my way sacred, fill me with beauty.
Says, I wonder if you have any suggestions for herbal pet care. specifically at this time of year, fleas, ticks, that sort of thing. I'm finding a lot of conflicting information on the internet. One site says give your pet garlic. Another says garlic is bad for our cat friends. One says citrus, i.e. lemon juice or grapefruit juice diluted on a flea comb is good. Another says it's toxic. I would appreciate your point of view if you have one. I'm aware that you are not a vet, so your herbal opinion matters. Thanks much.
What a nice note. Now, I do keep cats, but I don't keep dogs, and they are quite different. So I'm suspecting that if you're seeing conflicting information, it's because of the different needs of dogs and cats. Julie Anteberg-Levy, an incredible herbal veterinarian and dear friend of mine, used to fast her dogs at least one day, often 2 days out of the week. And if they were being bothered by ticks and fleas and so on, after their regular two-day fast, she would give them fermented lemon juice and garlic. And she would take lemons, half or quarter of them, squeeze them into a jar, and then just kind of coarsely chop up garlic peels and all and throw it in with the lemon. Leave it in the jar and let it ferment there. I was always worried that the jar was going to break. I was always like loosening the lid so the gases wouldn't build up in there. And then she'd pour this lemon garlic stuff all over some raw meat and give it to the dogs. Of course, the dogs were so hungry at this point, they would have eaten anything. And that's one of the big differences right there. I don't care how hungry a cat is, cats are going to be finicky about what they eat. Will cats eat garlic? Some cats will, some cats won't. Will it help repel insects? Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. Many people resort to drugs. I don't use drugs with my animals, following in Juliette de Berkeley-Levy's footsteps. I do natural rearing, so I don't use drugs. My cats do get fleas during the summertime, and I use a flea comb. And I sit outside with them and I comb them. And I keep the fleas to a reasonable number there. And then once it starts to get cold, the fleas die back and they're really no longer on the animal. So I, interestingly enough, have not found that any cat in good health is going to have a really bad infestation of fleas unless they're in an environment that already has a huge number of fleas because there were other unhealthy animals there. So that's the other thing, is seeing to your animal's health. And when I was teaching at the American Holistic Veterinarian Conference, I did attend a workshop on dried foods for cats, since I feed my cats dried foods, and I wanted to see what the experts had to say. And they said, it doesn't really matter a lot what you feed your cat, but you should feed your cat the same kind of food for its entire life. That once you choose a brand and the type of that brand, you should pretty much stick with it. They said, you know, there are certainly, you know, lifestyle choices within the brand, and so you would certainly feed, you know, the kitten part of your brand, you know, when the cat's a kitten, and so on and so forth. But that for both dogs and cats, the consistency of getting the same food over and over and over again is the single greatest factor for ensuring that that animal is healthy. So I certainly would recommend that you look up Juliette Barclay-Levy and her books about animals. And Justine, remind me, did she say that you had cats or dogs?
It was cats, and you should talk about hygiene in the house because the flea eggs can just get everywhere.
They can indeed. And
you know, also, what about that tablet that I gave my cats, which didn't harm the cats but damaged the exoskeleton of the fleas and completely got rid of the fleas in 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I used that thing, and that was really that. I thought that really worked well.
Right. I think that is some kind of drug. And I think it just depends on the individual person, how comfortable they feel with using a drug. So it's a start. It's certainly not definitive. As I said, I don't you know, don't work with dogs at all, but there's a lot of information available from Juliet de Berkeley Levy in her books about working with dogs. Yeah.
And cats.
More dogs, because she kept dogs.
Oh, okay, because this person who's asking said she has cats.
Exactly, so that's why I was sharing with her what I knew about cats.
Yeah.
And then she could also, you know, check out what Juliet
is
saying.
You know that Adelaide used a comb, right?
Yes, that's what I was suggesting, was combing them. The flea comb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's, for all concerned, if you're willing to do that, the best option. And I do understand that not everyone is willing to do that.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it depends if you like fleas in your house or not.
Right.
You know,
or
whether
or not your cats go outside.
Anything once they start biting you, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. So, next question. What kills a bladder infection?
You know, people often say to me, are your books the same? That they go over the same information? And I always say to them, no, my books are very different. They do not go over the same information at all, with this exception. And that is that virtually every one of my books deals with bladder infections. Bladder infections are in Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, because women who are pregnant get bladder infections. Bladder infections are in New Menopausal Years, the Wise Woman Way, because women who are menopausal get bladder infections. Bladder infections are in Down There, Reproductive, Sexual, and Pelvic Health for Everyone, the Wise Woman Way. Of course, includes bladder infections as well as lower urinary tract symptoms, which older men have. So for most women, it's not a matter of if you have bladder infection, it's a matter of when you have bladder infection. I, at one time in my life, saw myself as the champion of bladder infections. I started getting bladder infections when I was about 2, and I carried on with my bladder infections up into my late teenage years when I met a public health nurse who informed me that the drugs that I was taking to deal with my bladder infections were having an extremely adverse effect on my kidneys. And it was, in fact, one of the things that urged me toward herbal medicine, was this shocking to me news that drugs could be injurious to my body. I know you think I'm very naive not to have realized that before, but we're talking about the 60s here, when we were very naive and did think that drugs were going to eliminate disease completely from the world, which they haven't. So what do I suggest in all of those books? Well, the first thing that I suggest was the thing that really worked for me, and that's Uva Ursi. Uva Ursi, Octostaphylos Uva Ursi, Kinnikinnick, or Bear Berry. And it can be used as an infusion, an ounce of dried leaf brewed in a quart of boiling water in a jar at room temperature overnight. And then that taken by the quarter to half cup full. For many women, herbs are not even necessary if, when they feel that first uh-oh of the bladder infection, they start drinking. The bacteria that create a bladder infection actually have to cling to the bladder wall. So drinking a whole lot and thus urinating a whole lot actually does work by literally making the environment inhospitable to the bacteria, although those bacteria have little hooks on their tails that do allow them to hook in. Cranberry juice and blueberry juice as well have an agent that softens that little tail on the bacteria, so that if you're drinking a lot of water and you're drinking cranberry juice or blueberry juice, and I buy them in the bottles, the concentrate, and I find that very easy to use. I can just add however much I want to my water. So I'm both flushing the bacteria out and making their little hooks on their tails not work very well. Again, virtually every single one of my books, because my green book, Healing Wise, has many plants that are wonderful for helping to strengthen the bladder and the kidneys. And nettle became my major ally. And by using Uva Ursi and then strengthening my bladder and my kidneys with nettle. I actually moved myself into an area where many, many, many years have passed now since I've had a bladder infection.
All right. Thank you. So there is someone here who I think would like to ask you a question.
All right.
Are you there, and would you like to ask Susan a question?
Hello?
Hi, would you like
Hello,
to ask
welcome.
Susan a question?
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to ask a question.
Go right ahead.
So I have eczema, or what I guess is eczema. Not really checked it out seriously, but it's been going on for like 2 years, and it starts typically like on my lips or around my mouth, and then starts out like really itchy, and depending on how severe the outbreak, it'll turn into these bumps that a couple times have gone so bad that they'll just like blister. And then from there, it gets really dry, and that's the cycle. And just curious if you had any thoughts about eczema or whether you even think eczema is a real thing, but that's kind of my symptoms, so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you definitely bring up a very important point. Have we ever seen eczema walking down the street?
No. I don't know.
No, we have never seen eczema walking down the street. We may have seen people who have eczema walking down the street.
Sure.
But we've never seen eczema walking down the street. So you are quite right. Eczema doesn't really exist. Only people who have eczema exist. But that's not what you're dealing with.
Okay.
Your symptoms sound fairly classical herpes.
Oh. All right.
Is there some pain involved?
Not really. It's more itchy.
Mm-hmm. But not very
painful. It's gotten so bad before that it's covered my whole face. Like up to my forehead. And I don't know. Does herpes do that?
And have you used any kind of ointment on this?
I started using vitamin E oil, and that helps with the dryness, but nothing really helps with the itchiness.
Well, what herbalists tend to use to quell itchiness is plantain ointment.
Yeah.
And
okay.
you can easily make plantain ointment yourself if you want to. Or you can buy it. It's a standard item of commerce. It's so useful.
Oh, actually, that reminds me. I have put raw plantain on it before, and it made it worse. So, is that...
I'm not sure what you mean by raw plantain. The leaf of plantain?
Yeah, I took it and chewed it up and then put it on there.
Uh-huh.
Is that maybe overdoing it?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Okay. Well, do you think it's different in the ointment form if it's infused?
Yes, I do think it's different in ointment form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. Someone wrote into Prevention Magazine and they said, I drank a cup of oat straw tea and I had a heart attack, and I think you should warn people. And they, of course, had the wherewithal to say your heart attack had nothing at all to do with the fact that you drank a cup of oat straw tea.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, and we know this, that human beings are at their worst when they're trying to connect cause and effect. I'm not saying that it's impossible that the plantain made it worse any more than I would say that it's impossible that a cannonball could levitate.
Okay.
but I am saying that it's extremely unlikely.
All right.
That there is a cause and effect relationship there.
All right. So you think it's herpes, though?
It sounds more like that.
Okay.
That skin things are very slippery in terms of definition.
Right.
And as you so wisely started out saying, we don't want to treat a disease anyhow.
Yeah.
We want to deal with you and what's going on with you and not what's going on with some disease or some disease name. That we
right.
create. Right. Yeah. No, we really want to deal with what's going on with you. So, toward that end, have you noticed or been aware of any things that seem to precipitate your outbreaks?
Well, I don't know. I've talked to people and they've been
I'm not asking what other people say. I'm asking you if you have noticed any particular things that might precipitate outbreaks for you. Not what other people think should, but what you may or may not have noticed. Again, you know, remembering what we just said, that as human beings we're very poor at cause and effect. But sometimes people say to me, well, yeah, you know, I really notice that, you know, every time after I do so-and-so or eat so-and-so or am, you know, connected with this person that this happens.
Yeah. I've really tried to see if there is a trigger, especially with diet, and I haven't been able to. The only thing I can say is when I've had it really bad, I've been traveling. I've been in a place where that's new to me. And maybe kind of stress related.
That certainly sounds quite likely from what you're saying. Traveling is very stressful.
Right.
Even if we choose to travel, it's stressful.
Right. And being in sort of a different climate than I'm used to.
Yeah. So, at this point, are you drinking any nourishing herbal infusions on a regular basis?
Yeah, I drink a lot of, like, nettles and red clover and mint.
And tell me how you make it.
I just boil it. What I do is I set the pot on the stove. I bring it to a boil. I throw them in the pot, and then I turn the stove off and let it steep for about 10 minutes, and then I drink it.
Okay, that's not an infusion, and you're not getting much of anything from it.
All right.
Mineral extraction takes 4 hours.
Oh. All right.
So if you want your minerals from nettle and it's loaded with minerals, then 10 minutes isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
Do you weigh your herb out?
No.
So if I told you I was going to improve my diet by eating a slice of carrot, what would you say?
That was probably not going to help.
What you're doing is probably not helping you.
Yeah.
Let me go over how to make an infusion. If you wish to do it in a pan, that's fine. You'll lose some of the benefit, but not much. So you would bring 1 quart of water to a boil. You would weigh out 1 ounce of nettle or any other herb that you're using, oat straw or red clover, I think you mentioned. Those are wonderful infusion herbs. You would place that 1 ounce of your nettle or oat straw or red clover into the boiling water. Stir it until it comes to a boil again. Turn the fire off and put a lid on the pan and let it steep at least 4 hours. I usually let mine steep overnight.
All right.
My experience experience is that if you will start working with and truly making nourishing herbal infusions, that you will find that whatever it is that your body needs, it will be able to get from those plants once you start making them in a way that your body can actually get and utilize the nutrients.
Okay.
And that the next that I hear from you, you'll say, whatever that was, eczema, herpes of the plague from outer space, it is now gone.
I hope so. Yeah. Do you have any recommendations on specific herbs? I know I talked about nettles and clover, and but do you have any others?
Those are what I rotate through, stinging nettle, red clover, comfrey leaf, especially effective to help the skin, linden, an anti-inflammatory.
Linden?
Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N.
Like a linden berry?
Like a linden tree.
Tree, okay. I'll have to look that one up.
And it's the flower of the linden that you use.
All right.
And so I rotate through these five. So today I'm drinking red clover. Yesterday I had nettle. The day before that I had linden.
And comfrey and oat straw was the other?
And comfrey leaf and oat straw. You got it.
Oat straw. Okay.
All right.
And you make them all the same way?
I make them all exactly the same way.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give that
all right.
a try. Thank you very much.
Okay. You take care now. Bye-bye.
You
Dream
too. Blessing. Bye.
Hey, Susan.
Hi.
All right. So, in the 805 area... Hi, how you doing tonight? You have a question for Susan? Go right ahead.
Oh, I do. I have been dealing with some intense intestinal things for a few months, and I couldn't relate it to anything in diet. I had, like, diarrhea, and I'd get bloating and a lot of protest in my intestines, in my lower intestines, when I ate, like, salad or raw food, and I went to a GI doctor, and I was diagnosed with Crohn's, which I find a little strange, and I'm just trying to figure out how to put my body back in balance and feel good without relying on drugs.
Do they have drugs for people with Crohn's disease now?
Well, I was given something to take away the symptoms because I was not feeling good for 2.5 months, and I'm taking it. I'm going to tell you what the pill is called now. I've only been on it a week, which I immediately feel better. Like, I can eat anything, and I'm going to the bathroom normally, and I don't have any of the pain that I had. I'm taking Delzicol, and I was supposed
to take prednisone, but I don't want to. From your report, the drugs sound like they're being of enormous benefit to you right now.
Yeah, they are. But over the long run, I would like to, you know, fix whatever it is that made me get in this condition. And I feel like taking these is benefiting me right now because it was so, you know, such a long period of time that I just did not feel well. But
yeah.
I want to get to the root of my condition and not have to rely on medicine from the pharmacy to do that.
I share that goal with you, and I'm happy to see what we can do toward moving toward that goal.
Great.
My favorite herb for anyone with any kind of intestinal distress is slippery elm. Do you know about slippery elm, and have you used it?
No, I'm not familiar with slippery elm. I mean, I haven't met her or him or
it. Yeah, I agree. She is an kind of elm tree. And her inner bark is used. And it's available. I usually buy it powdered. And I mix the slippery elm powder with honey and make it into balls. And my 5-year-old granddaughter made a YouTube of her making slippery elm balls. So that you can see how simple and easy it is. I'll tell you a little bit of the backstory here. We took her for her 5th birthday to Disney World, and we all had a wonderful time. But her dad had, you know, some, you know, not happy gut going on there. And I said, I have some slippery elm, and I give you some slippery elm, because it's not just for people who have Crohn's disease or, you know, really severe problems. It's for all of us. If we have, you know, acid indigestion or just a problem, especially, you know, on the road or when there's stress. And and my granddaughter said, well, I want some too. And, of course, it's so safe. That's perfectly fine for her to have some, whether she has any kind of problem or not. It's, as you're talking about, it's vastly different from a drug. We wouldn't want her to, you know, if Dad was going to take a drug, we wouldn't say, sure, here, you can have some too. But he's taking an herb. Yes, she can have some too. As a matter of fact, it's, even if she were to eat an entire jar full, it would bring her no harm, because slippery elm is considered a food rather than a drug. It's that safe, and it is nourishing. So when I went to get my slippery elm, what did I discover? But I had only one slippery elm ball. So I gave it to the person in pain, which occasioned much distress on my granddaughter's part. And so she vowed that when we returned home, she was going to make some slippery elm balls so that when we went traveling, she would have some.
That's great, because I travel a lot, so you can make a bunch and store them with you, right?
That's
can you make a like a batch? Okay, great.
Yes, it's, and they store forever.
Oh, nice.
For years and years and years. Now, you know, I don't want to get your hopes up. It's certainly, you know, not true for everybody. But I will tell you that a significant number of people who've had a diagnosis of Crohn's disease who started using slippery elm have told me that for them it was like a miracle cure. That as soon as they started working with slippery elm, that they you know, very quickly stopped using their drugs.
Oh, good.
And again, you know, this certainly is going to differ from person to person. But it, you know, it, people have said this to me so frequently that I, unfortunately, almost expect it now. Which of course I shouldn't be, you know. We never can tell how any individual person is going to react to something or how quick the reaction is going to be. But I will say that all people find relief from intestinal pain and cessation of diarrhea within, for the pain, usually within 5 to 10 minutes, and for the diarrhea, usually within 1 to 4 hours from using slippery elm.
Oh, I should have called you a month ago. That would have helped me. That's good. I have another question related with this, in that I feel that my fauna, I'm sorry, I speak Spanish too, so I mix up.
Your flora and your fauna.
Yeah, I took Flagyl twice in the past 6 months, and I feel worried about the health of the creatures I should have in my body.
What can I do to bring that back into balance? What have you done to support them and strengthen them since you took the pledge?
Well, I don't do anything very consistently. I've drank kombucha, and I've had a little bit of fermented food, and then I have a Saccharomyces boulardii probiotic supplement. And that's
okay,
really
here's what I want you to do. I want you mm-hmm. to buy a quart of plain Danone yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to eat that quart in the next 7 days, and then I want you to buy another quart, and I want you to keep doing that basically for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Eating a quart of yogurt a week, especially plain Danone yogurt, is the best way to reestablish good, healthy gut flora.
Mm-hmm.
It is, well, let me tell you my experience. I keep a herd of dairy goats, and
mm-hmm.
I love yogurt, and I love using the milk from my goats to make my own yogurt. And people
mm-hmm.
said to me, you can't do that. You can't make yogurt from raw goat's milk. Goat's milk has a lot of bacteria of its own in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make yogurt from goat's milk, you have to pasteurize it. And every recipe that I saw for making yogurt from goat's milk instructed me to pasteurize the milk and said that if I didn't, it simply wasn't going to work. Furthermore, they said, because of the high bacteria count in goat's milk, even well-handled goat's milk, it
mm-hmm.
was advisable to add powdered milk
mm-hmm.
to the yogurt to make it thick.
Hmm.
Now, none of this was acceptable to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keeping my own goats so that I can have my own raw milk. I'm not going to pasteurize it. So
mm-hmm.
I did trials with all of the various yogurts
mm-hmm.
to see if there were any of them that had enough active microorganisms to actually culture the raw goat's milk.
Mm-hmm.
And Danone was the only one that did it.
Oh, good. So you just answered my question of why Danone. So if I don't
so
eat Danone,
all advertise, and I'm not saying that the advertising is wrong. I'm not calling anybody out on it. I am merely sharing my experience, and my experience
mm-hmm.
is there's only one kind of yogurt that will culture
that worked for
raw
you.
Goat's milk without any thickener,
mm-hmm.
and we get a nice, good, thick yogurt, and not just for me, but for anybody who's tried it with their goat's milk. And
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm. Okay.
In addition to that, hey, if you want to drink kombucha, that's fine, but it's vinegar.
Oh, okay.
And that's all it is vinegar. It's not really going to do you much good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see you drinking some good organic wine or some organic beer. Not a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if you drank as much as you drank kombucha, you'd get a lot more benefit from it.
Yeah, I don't
drink
that much kombucha.
You like kombucha?
Pardon me? No, I haven't.
I'm sorry?
I haven't had that. I don't drink that much of it.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, do something that
mm-hmm.
you will do, like drink some wine. Get some organic
mm-hmm.
wine. Right,
mm-hmm.
some wine that doesn't have preservatives in it, and that will help your gut flora.
Oh, good.
Right.
And
yes,
so
makes this fun. You don't have to do penance because you were bad. You know,
mm-hmm.
you on looking at all your options, decided that flagyl was your best option.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
what you did. And, you know, there are infections sufficiently severe that flagyl is used. It's true that the United States is indeed the only country that allows flagyl to be used because it is a known carcinogen, but, you know.
Oh, great.
And again,
they don't
I talk
tell
about
that
this.
In small print, right? Yeah, so
they
if
do.
I make my own. Oh, they do? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't read it then because it's yeah, whatever. It's
most people
print.
Don't. Most people don't read the package insert.
Well, I do start reading it, and then it gets very complex, and everything blurs together for me. So
this
makes a lot more sense. And so my question is, can I make my own yogurt and it will be as beneficial as eating Danon?
So long as you use Danon as the starter.
Okay. That sounds good. And then I use
a cup of gallon per gallon of goat's milk heated to 110 degrees. I heat the milk to 110. Then I add a cup of Danon. I actually mix some of the warm milk in with the Danon and then pour it into the pot. I do not suggest that people make yogurt in small amounts. It doesn't really make up as well in small amounts as it does in larger amounts. And yogurt will, you're going to be eating a quart of yogurt a week, so a gallon is only a month's worth.
Okay. And you do have like a tutorial or something about this, right? I think I heard
I was listening to
you speak with Claire, somebody today, and you mentioned making yogurt.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a recipe for how I make yogurt in my book, A New Menopause of Years, The Wise Woman Way.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, okay.
Yes, it's one place that you can find that.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Okay.
All right, be well.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's some people here, but nobody seems to want to ask a question yet. So I'm going to go with another person who emailed in asking to have their question answered. Okay?
Okay.
I am 46 and trying to conceive. I have regular periods. I was thinking of trying Vitex. Can it screw up my periods if they are now regular? Thanks. We did this last week. It's a popular one.
This is a very popular question. And
this
is
definitely
indeed
a different question, though. It just came in yesterday.
It's a different person. But I was thinking, is this the same? No, but it's definitely a different woman.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Vitex is thought to reset the pineal and pituitary glands as we move toward menopause. So having a regular period, especially when we're older than 45, is unfortunately fairly meaningless as far as fertility goes. We are very likely at this time in our lives to be having anovulatory cycles. And yet those cycles can still be regular. They are usually scantier than our ovulatory cycles, but, you know, things still seem to be going on. And certainly, I have known women of a great many ages to get pregnant. The oldest woman that I knew who got pregnant was a woman who got pregnant at 53, and she had her last period at the age of 50. So she was, needless to say, quite a bit surprised, but it was with, as she put it, a new sweetheart. And so we figured, there's a certain thing that goes on with new sweethearts, isn't there? And, you know, thinking along those lines then, I have come to suggest to women in your situation that you somehow make your old sweetheart a new sweetheart and see if you can catch the swing of what is that frisson, what is that ooh about the new sweetheart, because it does seem to shift our hormones. As for Vitex messing you up, you know, you never want to say never because anything can be possible, but I have certainly never heard about Vitex messing up a normal period that was going along fine. In general, Vitex used as a tincture is thought to be far more successful than Vitex used in pills, and certainly far less expensive. And large amounts can be used, and there are those that say that if you, in fact, don't use a large amount, that you might as well not use it at all. Certainly a dropperful 3 or 4 times a day, up to even 4 dropperfuls 4 times a day is the amount that's recommended. If, however, what you are saying is, hey, my period is perfect, my period is right the way I want it to be, then I'm wondering why you would use Vitex at all. It seems to me to be the kind of thing that women choose to use when they feel like they're kind of teetering on the edge of menopause. Red clover, as you may recall, is my favorite fertility herb. So drink your nourishing herbal infusions, especially your red clover infusion, and I think that you will be successful in your quest for a child. Green blessings.
I think there's someone here who has a question. In the 530 area code, would you like to speak with Susan tonight? Hello? Hello? Hi.
Yes, hello.
Would you like to ask Susan a question?
Yes, I would. Hi, Susan. I am 40 years old, and I have had 2 children. My second child was just born 6 months ago, and I had both children vaginally. And I am wondering what you would recommend as the best way to take care of my yoni at this place in my life, having had 2 children already naturally and feeling like being a little bit concerned about these next 10 years before menopause and taking the best care I can of my yoni and just what your recommendations are.
Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
I do drink some herbs and make herbs and herbal tea that I grow in my garden on a regular basis.
That sounds wonderful, but that isn't nourishing herbal infusions.
Okay.
Nourishing herbal infusions are a specific thing. And okay. We would use only non-aromatic herbs like stinging nettle, oat straw, comfrey leaf, red clover, linden blossoms, rose hips, hawthorn berries, mullein, chickweed, cleavers, corn silk, any non-aromatic herb, violet leaf, especially those that are rich in minerals, vitamins, and protein.
Okay.
And that's why my 5 favorites are nettle, oat straw, red clover, and comfrey, high in protein.
Mm.
And linden, all 5 high in minerals, and linden is an anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
So I rotate through these 5 infusions are the main thing that I drink. And I prepare them by weighing out with a scale 1 ounce of dried herb.
Okay.
I use only dried herb. There is no particular value to using fresh herbs.
Okay.
So the herb is
dried.
And can
just dry them in the sun, dry them in a dehydrator?
Once a plant is picked, the sun is its enemy for the rest of its life. No plant that has been harvested should ever again see the sun or be exposed to the sun.
Mm.
The sun will rob it of all of its usefulness. When I'm harvesting, I harvest into a basket that has a towel over it. Or I put it in the shade. And I dry herbs only in a very well-ventilated and shady place.
Okay.
Nor would I ever make a sun tea.
Okay.
So I weigh out 1 ounce of the herb. I put that 1 ounce into a quart jar. I fill that jar right up to the top with boiling water. And I put a tight lid on my jar. And I let that steep for at least 4 hours, and usually I let it steep overnight.
Mm.
Mineral extraction takes a minimum of 4 hours.
Mm.
So when we make an herbal tea, even if the herb we're using has minerals in it, if we only steep it for a short amount of time, then we're not getting the minerals that are in that herb extracted into our tea.
And do you keep the dried herbs in the refrigerator, or you can keep them at room temperature?
I would never put dried herbs in the refrigerator, which is a moist environment.
Okay.
We want dried herbs to stay dry, so they should be stored somewhere dry, which is not usually the refrigerator.
And one last question. I've heard about, and I have some members of my family who are in the more chrome stage of their life. One aunt in her 70s had her uterus out recently, and it's something
I'm sorry to hear that. 95% of those operations that are done in the United States are not needed. I'm sorry that she didn't call the HERS, Hysterectomy Education Resource Service. They are there to help counsel any woman who's been told that she needs a hysterectomy and to help her decide whether or not that is the truth. 35% of the women in America over the age of 60 have had their uterus removed. This causes long-term health consequences and is not to be done lightly, although doctors lightly recommend it. I'm not saying that your aunt made a mistake. There are certainly times and situations in which the removal of the uterus can be life-saving. But what I'm saying is what I've learned from HERS, Hysterectomy Education Resource Center, that 95% of the hysterectomies done in the United States today are not needed.
This is non sequitur, but is this active sexual life, is that helpful to maintaining the health of the of one's yoni? Is that a positive thing that women should be seeking in later years?
It's difficult often to know what people mean when they say sex, because it can cover so many different things. But let me put it this way. The only known tissue in the body that does not age is the clitoris. So a woman has the same sexual capacity, although she may not have the same desire, at 90 as she does at 19. We know that orgasm itself is indeed extremely healthy. When you say sex, it is possible that you mean being with a partner. When I say sex, what I mean is orgasm. And whether or not there's a partner there is completely immaterial in terms of the health benefit. I am certainly not saying that the partner is immaterial or should be ignored. I am simply answering your question about health benefits. And in terms of health benefits, partnered or unpartnered matters not.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome. So get busy with drinking your nourishing herbal infusions, and I think that you will see some wonderful changes.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Hi.
Hey, there you
are. Yeah, here I am. There's a few people in the room, but actually more than a few people. Looks like a couple dozen. But we're going to go back to another email question. A lot of times the people who are sending an email question are here with us. It's just that they're overseas and it's hard for them to call in.
Yes.
Or they don't have a microphone for their computer to be able to call in via their computer. So here is from Kelly. And she says, Dear Susan, I want to say that I love, love, love your videos. I am a Rochester, New York transplant to Missouri, and I own a small farm, permaculture farm. I made the ragweed tincture, but I'm missing the dosage on it. Can you advise? I would love to come to a class, and you are welcome to come visit me.
Oh, what fun. If I'm ever there, I surely will. The ragweed tincture, I learned about in a very fun way. I was teaching in Texas. I was teaching a class called Weeds in Your Garden Bite Back. I taught this class all over the world, and it's a delightful class. I always enjoy myself very much. And this time, I had something that I hardly ever have. I had a blackboard, a big blackboard, and I said, oh, goody, let's make use of this big blackboard. I'm going to stand up here, and I'm going to write things down, and everybody here in class, you call out the names of all your weeds. And I started writing, and I filmed that blackboard from top to bottom, from end to end, with the names of weeds that people had in their garden. And when the blackboard was filled, I turned around, dusted the chalk dust off my hands, and said, all right, let's start by erasing any plants here that are useless. And several people said, ragweed. And up from the left-hand side of the room and up from the right-hand side of the room jumped a man and a woman as though they were on little springs. And they both almost simultaneously said, the tincture of flowering ragweed can be used to help overcome pollen allergies. Looked at each other, giggled, and sat down. And it turned out, no, they did not know each other at all. So that's what I know about it. I don't suffer from allergies, so I've never taken it. We're talking about a plant that's in the Asteraceae family, and there aren't poisonous plants in the Asteraceae family. There are some that can do weird things if you take a whole lot of them over a very long period of time. But in general, the plants in the Asteraceae family are quite medicinal, like chamomile and echinacea, like burdock and boneset. So I would, personally, I like to, when I'm experimenting with a plant, I like to start with a small dose and gradually work myself up to a dose that seems to be effective. Now, by a small dose, I would usually start with most herbs with a dose of 5 or possibly 10 drops of the tincture. If we're talking about using this to actually counter the symptoms of an allergy, I would wait 10 or 15 minutes, and if I didn't get symptomatic relief, I would take another 5 or 10 drops, and I would continue to do that every 15 minutes until I experienced the relief I was looking for from taking that herb. And I would then make note of how much that dose was, and that's the dose that I would use the next time I wanted to use that herb in that way. So if I had to take 4 5-drop doses, then the very next time I would start out with 20 drops. But this is one way to figure out for oneself the most effective dose. And dosing is one of the most individual and, shall we say, idiosyncratic parts of herbal medicine. We have working and getting good results right now, herbalists who are trained in England, where they are told that the beginning dose of any herbal tincture is a teaspoonful, and that less than that will work. I once asked an English-trained herbalist how on earth they could possibly justify such a huge amount of plant, and she said, well, after being in America, what she thought was that for some reason, the plants they had in England weren't very strong, and that's why they had to use so much. I don't know. Haven't really tested her theory out at all, but it was interesting to me. So we have the English-trained herbalist using a teaspoonful as their starting dose, and we have Matthew Wood, a wonderful herbalist, whose high dose is 3 drops of any tincture. The process that I've explained to you obviously strikes a middle ground there, allowing a small amount of that tincture, if it's going to be effective for you, to be effective, but allowing you also to take larger amounts if you need to. I hope this helps. Green blessings. And I think I do have a CD set out called Elements of Herbalism Dosage.
I'm sorry?
I believe I have a CD set called Elements of Herbalism Dosage for anyone who's interested in more information about how to figure out what the dose of an herb would be.
Yes, you do, and it's a part of a three-talk series, isn't it? Elements of Herbalism Dosage, and I think there's three CDs that can be purchased separately about that, right?
Yes, I think there's two CDs per set, and there's three sets in the series, Elements of Herbalism, Harvesting Elements of Herbalism, Dosage, and Elements of Herbalism Making Medicine.
Yeah, so that's like so much information, wow. And
yeah,
that can be found at wisewomanbookshop.com, and you can just order it right there. Lots of great stuff there, too. Okay, thank you for that wonderful answer about ragweed. The next question here. Hello, I've been reading your website, and I am just confused on a couple of herbs. I see both burdock seed and root being suggested for rosacea. Which one is the best? I want to order some, but I don't want to get it wrong. I don't have your books yet, but I plan on ordering soon. Thank you, Christy.
Wouldn't it be easy if life provided us with this is the very best thing? You know, even the MDs can't tell you what is the very, very best thing, and they have millions and millions and millions of dollars that are being used to test things to try to determine what is the best thing. People are different. Conditions are different. Herbs are different. What's the difference between burdock root and burdock seed? Burdock seed is easier to get to than burdock root. If you're reading my green book, Healing Wise, which features burdock in addition to other wonderful herbs like nettle and oat straw and seaweed and violet and chickweed and dandelion, then I've included information about burdock root and about burdock seed, because I want you to see that all the parts of the herb do have valid and important uses. However, if you go out to buy herb, you probably won't find burdock seed for sale. I could be wrong about that, but I don't see burdock seed for sale. It tends not to be an item of commerce. So in a way, if you're going to be buying it, your question is answered for you. You can only buy burdock root. Whether or not burdock root is better than burdock seed, no one could possibly be able to tell except for you. And if you use burdock root for a while and you find that it's not successful, but that the burdock is telling you that the seeds could be useful for you, then we're coming up to the time to harvest burdock seeds. Starting in September is when we harvest burdock seeds. So you will be able to harvest some yourself. I encourage people to get in touch with the plants they're using. Find them in their local environment and have a chat with that plant. Your question is a good lead-in and a good preparation for chatting with the plant and asking the plant what you're asking me. It's a good question, but it's not an answerable question except in the specific for you and the plant that you are working with.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
See, I'm just looking to see if there's anybody. Oh, we have a few people here who are would like to ask a question, so I'm going to open up the line for the first one and then keep be mindful that there's another person waiting after that person, okay?
Okay.
A third person. No, there's three people now. Okay.
There's three, okay.
Yeah. Hello in the 703 area code. Please ask Susan a question if you have one for her.
Hi, Susan. This is Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hello. I'm a bit of a new fan. I've known your name for a long time. I've been a very amateur herbalist for a long time. My first book was Jethro Cloth. So one question I have for you is, you have such a wealth of knowledge. How much of that is just experience? How much of that is learning from other people? And how much of that do you get from the plants themselves?
You want percentages?
Because I communicate with plants, but I don't feel like I'm sure enough of what I'm getting. So maybe some pointers on that.
Where do you live?
I'm in Virginia, in the northern part of Virginia.
Well, I would suggest that you come up next year for Talking with Plants workshop, which I do yearly, and or that you take the Green Allies correspondence course, in which I write down all the information I have about talking with plants and how to tell the difference between what the plant is telling you and what you're projecting onto the plant.
Okay. And I thought it was a wonderful tie-in, because you were talking about, well, we're coming up on harvesting burdock seeds, and I have this beautiful burdock plant in my yard that, you know, everybody tells me it's a weed, but I love it, and I refuse to pull it up. even though it catches my clothes sometimes, because it's right along the walkway, but that's okay. My question with burdock, I have read that it's a biennial.
It is. You don't sound like you're quite sure what that means.
Well, no, I know what that means, but I've had one in the same spot for so long, and it goes to seed every
year.
Not
really. No, it doesn't.
So it's just new one?
Correct. It's not the same plant.
Because I have one in that same spot, and it goes to seed every single year. So it must be multiple plants.
Either that, or it's not burdock. That's a possibility,
okay,
too.
Okay.
It's certainly a possibility that you have some plant which you have mistakenly decided is burdock.
Is it possibly great dock?
Great dock is burdock.
Okay, that's the same thing.
Butterbur is a perennial.
I have never heard of that one.
This one
gets up about 4.5 by feet
almost
tall.
It's almost impossible to identify a plant over the telephone.
Right.
Let's not make ourselves crazy.
Okay.
But check out butterbur.
Okay.
And see if it might be butterbur. If what you're saying is, this is the same plant, I know it's the same plant, then what I'm telling you is it cannot be burdock.
Right. Okay. It looks like all the pictures of burdock. And I have not, I guess I haven't looked like exactly to see if it's really the same plant, because it dies back every winter. I have no burdock in my yard in the winter because it all dies back. So it could be that it's new plants coming up in the same spot. But I will look under.
You would not have it blooming every year.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It only blooms every other year. It's a biennial.
Okay. Then I will look up butterbur and see if that is what it is.
Yeah, because it's not burdock.
Okay.
If it's there every year.
Okay. All right.
What color are the flowers?
Oh, pinkish blue. If I remember right. I wasn't here when they bloomed this year. I was out in California. I missed them.
I hear you.
So now I have
which is what the field guide is going to ask you. What color were the flowers? some, you know, there's some plants that it's taken me, you know, 4 or 5 or even 6 or 7 years to figure out what they are. Because as you say, you have to be there right at the right time. So
you do, and I love growing. I love seeing new things grow in my yard because I like to wait until I can figure out what they are before I pull them.
What fun!
It is. It's real, very interesting. I'm learning a lot.
That's good.
Yeah, I have one other quick question. I had watched a video or listened to one of your earlier talks, and you said something about raw foods being dangerous, or raw herbs or something, that you shouldn't eat them, and for example, green juices and smoothies magnified the danger.
Susan, this is Justine.
Yes.
Susan,
would
you give an abbreviated response so we could move on to some of the other people that are also waiting?
Just
I know it's a deep topic. It's kind of not an add-on topic. It's kind of a deep topic.
Maybe I should save it for another time?
Well, I think Susan can give a concise response.
What we're looking at is severalfold. First of all, nothing in nature eats raw food because there's no nutrition of any kind available from raw food. So let's just put that on the table right there. Eating raw food is pointless and useless. That aside, if we take raw food, it is frequently possible, especially if it's been grown in your own garden, that it's been contaminated with a variety of foodborne pathogens that come in from wild animals. Most people love to see birds in their garden, but don't think about the fact that birds bring E. coli and some very difficult strains of it along with them, and that we may not necessarily see where that landed on the plants that go into our green drink. Once we break up the plant by blending it or juicing it, those foodborne bacteria that can very easily be on it are freed up, aerated, and given a lot of sugar because the breaking down of the plant basically frees up the sugar in it. They can multiply by about 10,000 times within a few minutes. So whereas before there may have been a few pathogenic E. coli on the spinach, now there's a huge amount. And when we had an E. coli outbreak because of spinach, the first person to die was a young boy whose mom made him a green drink with it.
Mm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello in the 317 area code. Would you like to ask Susan a question this evening?
Yes, I would. Thanks, Justine. Hi, Susan. This is Victoria. I'm calling from Indiana. I was a student of yours about 10 years ago, and I just love you to death. And I'm so excited
Thank
to talk to you,
you
tonight.
Thank you. But love me to life, if you would be so kind.
much better wording. Yes.
Thank
I have
you.
Two questions. The first is I have what I think to be melasma on my face. It's like a discoloration, kind of like colasmo that you get with a mask of pregnancy. But I've had it for several years and been pregnant and, you know, now postpartum. It's not gone away. And I wonder if there's anything I could be doing for that. I've heard that it may be hormonal. It's particularly troublesome to me because it manifests itself over my upper lip. And so it kind of, you know, when I go out into the sun, just even a tiny bit of sun, it looks like I have a mustache. And I don't like to wear makeup or, you know, put a bunch of junk on my face. And so, you know, in order to cover it up, I would have to do that. And it's kind of troublesome. So I basically just try to keep my face out of the sun all the time. So I wonder if there's something I could do.
I don't know of any particular intervention. The discoloration that can occur on the face due to changes of hormones during pregnancy usually goes away, but it can be permanent. So since there's no particular thing that I know of to do, what we could then do is we could say, well, let's use energy medicine. Let's use thought medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So set aside some time on a regular basis to think it away.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was told by her dentist, you have precancerous lesions on the inside of your cheeks. You got to stop getting up in the middle of the night and drinking coffee and drinking it all day long and smoking so many cigarettes, you're going to get oral cancer. And she decided to use the coffee and the cigarettes as a meditation for getting rid of her cancer. And every time she smoked a cigarette, it was a prayer for those cells to become normal. And every time she drank a cup of coffee, it was washing away any abnormal cells. And within 3 months, all of her cells were normal.
Ashe. It's beautiful. Okay.
Okay.
All right. That feels all really right. Good.
All right.
One more quick question, if I could. I've very recently, within the last 2 weeks, had this interesting reaction to being in like anger or stressful situations where I have an immediate headache, like immediate. Something frustrates me, or something is very stressful at work, or something, and I'm taking Motherwort, and I've allied with Motherwort, and that helps kind of, you know, ease my anxiety, ease my stress, even, you know, help me digest and work through, you know, the anger and action around anger, but the headaches are just like powerful and instant. And I'm sure
sounds
there's a lot
awful.
Of energy medicine work. Yeah, it's really awful.
It's extremely awful, yeah. Skullcap, of course, very aptly named, is a powerful medicine that we can ally with if we're having headaches. And, of course, it's always tricky whenever you're talking to anybody about headaches, because a headache could be a harbinger of something really horrible like brain cancer.
Sure.
And there's no way for me over the telephone to know that.
I have no sense at all that there's anything actually physically wrong with my brain. It feels much more like almost like my crown chakra is not opening appropriately to allow that. It feels like a powerful surge, you know, like a surge of anger, a surge of frustration that is not moving well and being integrated well within my body, within my emotions, and it's just clustering.
So let me ask you this. Is it possible, sure, when this is happening, for you to go outside?
It certainly is at home, not at work. I'm currently working inside of a hospital. So I
understand.
Just get up and go, yeah.
What Sun Bear suggested for this kind of situation was literally earth. That you get your hands, and if you need to, your head into the earth. And for people who couldn't actually go outside and get into the earth, he suggested bringing to work a kitty litter tray with earth in it. I know, difficult at the hospital. And, you know, unfortunate that he, you know, says kitty litter tray. What he just means is a shallow pan with some dirt in it, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, that you don't have to bring a whole huge amount of dirt in. It could, of course, be sand, and it could also be sterile potting soil. And sterile potting soil is salt. It's also possible, and again, you know, we can crank this down as much as we need until we can get it to a place where it can work for you. It could be a potted plant that's in a pot with dirt. You need to be able to pick up the potted plant and hold it up against your head. So that the energy from your head can move into the dirt.
I have a lot of stone allies. Do you think maybe just taking one of my stone allies would get that same grounding feeling, or do you think there's something very specific about the earth?
Try it and see.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Thank you so much, Susan. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Green blessings. Love you so much.
Hugs and kisses.
Thanks.
Hello in the 210 area code. Are you there?
I am.
Go ahead and speak with Susan.
Hi, Susan. My name is Pat. I'm one of your correspondent students, and I am delighted to speak with you this evening.
Hi, Susan. I have
a question about motherwort tincture. I don't have access to fresh motherwort growing in my area, at least that I've been able to identify yet. I have ordered seeds, but I wanted to make and use the tincture, and I know I've heard on several occasions that you said it needs to be fresh. So my question is basically, what would be the downside of using dried motherwort as opposed to waiting until I grow my own fresh for my tincture?
Well, let me tell you a wonderful thing that happened to me. Very early on, I was teaching in Florida. And a kind of bouncy person was in my class. His name was Marvin. And Marvin was just, you know, filled with energy, and he had lots of questions, and he chattered on and so on. And then the next year I came back to the same workshop center and taught there again. And Marvin was in class again. It was great to see him. And we got to the point in class where somebody asked this very question. And Marvin leapt out of his seat and he said, "Please let me answer that question." I said, "Well, I'm happy to have you answer the question, Marvin. Go right ahead." Marvin said, "Last year I was here and Susan said, don't make tinctures from dried plants." So I ignored her and I made tinctures from dried plants and they were all CRAP. He said, "Save your time, save your effort, save your money."
Oh.
So I'd like to thank Marvin for reminding us all that dry plants and fresh plants are different.
Right.
And that when we're making a tincture, we don't want the plant to be broken down. We don't want it to be oxidized. We don't want the polyphenols to be used up. We don't want the cell walls to be broken, because tincturing takes place through osmosis, and it takes place with the cell walls intact. In fact, there's some plants that I take the tincture, the vodka, and the jar to the plant rather than the other way around, and put the plant in the jar and pour the vodka over it right there, because I don't even want it to be 5 minutes past the time when I picked it.
Gotcha.
Your far better choice is to buy some motherwort tincture.
Okay. I understand. I was just curious because I'm going through my correspondence book, and there's lots of tinctures and stuff to make that I want to get practice making, but I don't have access to the plant. So I've been over.
And where do you live? Where do you live?
I'm in San Antonio, Texas area.
Mm-hmm. Chickweed grows in San.
And I've grown some based on my correspondence, but some ones I really want to use for my personal health conditions, I'm going to have to actually order seeds and grow them. So, and I'm okay with that. I was just wondering the reasoning behind this.
You're gonna
make it longer.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to order sage?
No,
like garden
sage? Got garden sage, and I have it growing, and I've been able to make that. And I'm going
to
time some others.
The aromatic plants will do extremely well there.
Okay.
In San Antonio.
And I've worked. I've got some tincture brewing now for that. You know, I'm working my way through my book from you on my 52 herbs, but some of them I just haven't found or identified yet. So I'll just get the seeds and
I think you're right. I think you probably will have to grow motherwort. I don't think that it's a common weed in your area.
I haven't found it yet, anyway.
But you certainly will be able to grow it. Okay. I've seen it grown very successfully there.
Okay. Well, I'll do that.
All right.
So, anyway,
okay.
That was my question.
And
thank you.
And meanwhile, support somebody else who's making the tincture. Just buy some tincture.
I will order it from those that I know make it fresh.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Green blessings.
It.
Okay. It's wonderful talking to you. Bye-bye now.
Hi.
Hi.
Here. Someone else with a question? In the 203. Hi. Go right ahead.
Hi, Susan. I have a very quick question, which you may not feel comfortable answering or helping me with. You had a woman on last week that was talking about making her own hemp oil. Do you remember? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm not remembering anything about hemp oil.
Okay. Maybe it was tincture.
I think it might have been.
Okay. I was speaking to someone, a friend of mine has breast cancer that's returned, and someone was telling me if she could get a cannabis oil, that is a remarkable cure for these things, and I was just wondering if perhaps this woman was listening. Maybe
it's,
she should contact you.
I know that it is available in states where marijuana is legal.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
So,
how
would I go
about? You should be able to get more
information.
You need to be in a state where marijuana is legal. You need to be in a state where people are compassionate and have legalized marijuana, and you need to find a pharmacy. She needs a doctor's prescription. And when she has a doctor's prescription, she can go to a pharmacy and she can buy what she needs.
Oh,
which
so she can get it in
oil.
Which
is as it should be.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I didn't realize that the pharmacist sold the oil.
Yes.
Wow, that's great news. All right, thank you so much, and I love listening to you.
You are welcome. All right.
Okay.
And blessings on you for helping your friend. May her dance with cancer be one that benefits all.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
In the 602 area code, would you like to speak with Susan this evening? If so, go right ahead.
Well, hello. It's Rhonna Prince. I'm the filmmaker of Sacred Journey of the Heart.
Oh, it's 9
here
o'clock.
It is 9
we
o'clock.
Got here.
Perfect. That went so fast.
Yep.
Susan, do you have the information I faxed to you?
I have the information that you gave me a week ago.
Okay, good. So go right ahead.
Okay.
And good night, everybody. I'll be listening.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, here we are at Women's Radio, and you are joining Susan Weed and Rhonna Prince. Rhonna Prince is the writer and producer of Sacred Journey of the Heart, which is a film about the science and spirit of our connection. Hopefully she will explain what that means. She's also an intuitive counselor and a coach and a guide to sacred sites around the world, and she's a songwriter. Rhonna Prince has created a step-by-step personal growth process called Modern Mastery. Now, of course, I always say that if you master something, you have mastery, but if you are the mistress of something, you have mystery. Rhonna Prince guides her clients through the process of transition and creating a new reality that will align with each person's unique talents and dreams. Rhonna presents workshops throughout the U.S. on topics of spirituality and conscious change creation. She is a certified radical forgiveness coach, an Aura Soma practitioner, and a licensed teacher of the Institute of Heart Math Tools and Techniques. Rhonna Prince's goal with her film, Sacred Journey of the Heart, is to encourage viewers to dive in and make the connection to their hearts and to the hearts of all. We are all connected. And the place of connection is the heart. Welcome to the show, Rhonna Prince.
Hi, thanks for having me. I always love to share my message of heart.
Well, tell us about your film, Sacred Journey of the Heart.
Well, it's a project I started in 2009, knowing absolutely nothing about filmmaking or apparently, as I found out later, diving into my own heart, because we started shooting in 2009 at a trip that I had organized for people, my clients, to go to sacred sites in Glastonbury and private entry into Stonehenge so we could film how they transformed. But lo and behold, when the footage started coming back and I looked at myself on camera, I thought, oh my Lord, I am scared to death. I'm in this film supposedly teaching about the process of opening one's heart, and I look scared to death. And so what it really turned out to be is a film about, you know, not just mine, but the process of many people's transformations when you really deeply go into your heart and transform and experience what's inside there and lighten up your burden, whatever's packed in there, as we talk about in the film. So it was quite an amazing process of looking through the lens to shoot something where it was the universe looking back at me. That sounds familiar to you or your listeners.
That sounds quite amazing. So you were able to see very clearly when you looked at what you had filmed and saw yourself, your own fear.
I really did. I saw my fear of being authentic, and that was undeniable right there on camera for the whole world to see, and we showed that as part of the film.
And you were able to change that in yourself by a variety of things that you show us in the film, such as going to sacred sites or doing or soma work, or there are so many things that you do. I'm curious as to, does the film focus on all of them, just some of them?
Well, one of the main focuses in the film that shows up early on is what really transformed things for me, because I had done a lot of spiritual work, Orisoma, which is color therapy, energy, and a lot of, you know, channeling and tarot and numerology, all the things that I was comfortable with, but there was nothing that was really deeply touching into my own past and my own history and my own heart. And there was a turning point where I saw myself looking like a scared deer in the headlights, and I said, you know, to the universe, bring me the next step, and that next step showed up as Colin Tipping, who's created the Radical Forgiveness. And I met Colin, and I really immersed myself in his process, because it was the key for me was to feel the feelings that I had thought, well, let's just leave them in the past and behind, because as a spiritual counselor and coach, I was of the mindset of mind that if we focused on things like lower vibrational frequencies like anger and resentment, that would lower our energy. Well, what I learned from Colin is there's nothing wrong with those energies. It was just keeping them stuffed inside. And then Colin showed me how to unpack that, let it out, and then I was free to experience the entire range of human emotion, which is a lot better than the little narrow band I was living in before. Does that make sense?
This is, in fact, exactly what we do with the apprentices who come and stay with me here at the Wise Woman Center. As we tell them, everybody has a full deck of cards. Everybody has every card in their deck. And choosing to play with only a few cards out of your deck is not worthy of you or healing for others.
I love that. Yeah, I was probably playing with like 5 cards out of 78 of the tarot, or 2 out of 50, whatever the other regular chart deck is. Really, really, yeah, that's great.
Yes,
I love
that,
it.
That really is what people do. They say, oh, no, Queen of Spades, we're not having any of that. She's too bad. Yes.
And that Joker card. No, I wasn't going to deal with that.
No. The Tower, uh-oh, that one looks bad, too.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And we also say to them, we say that, you know, what most people do is they put themselves up a tree. And they put themselves up a tree because they believe that no one cares and that it's dangerous down in the swamp. And so we invite you to come down in the swamp. And, yes, the truth of the matter is it is dangerous down here in the swamp.
The swamp of of unexpressed emotion is what my swamp was.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But danger is what life is about.
Yep.
And it's exactly what you're saying. You know, if we don't allow ourselves, then we don't really allow ourselves to live. And you're not talking about, and I'm not talking about, going out and freaking out on other people. That's not at all. As a matter of fact, what we're talking about is not doing that. It's learning tools and techniques so that you can express, feel, and have your feelings without inappropriately putting them on others.
Well, I love it that you get that, because I've had lots of radio interviews lately and people really get confused about this concept that we're not talking about emotions that blob all over and, you know, rage and repression. It's really about mastering the intuitive aspect of the heart, where you take some time, you listen in, and you let your true heart's wisdom lead the way. My contention is the heart knows the truth, but you've got to separate that untrained heart and the hormonal responses to the world to the real mastery of the heart, which is listening quietly to that voice within.
What did you need to do to listen quietly?
Well, I first had to be willing to acknowledge what was there. And that, you know, when I work with my clients on my modern mastery, awareness is the first step. And I had to just be aware that I was pretending, I was doing what Colin Tipping calls a spiritual bypass, which is, it's all good, you know, and you usually have some sort of grimace on your face while you're saying that, you know, and it's really because there's something you haven't accepted. And I finally had to just be aware that some things happened in my past that, and from a human perspective, were horrible, and I never had allowed myself to express it. And I actually showed up and expressed that in the film, and I have had a number of people walk out of the film because I express anger, and even, you know, the old energy that was stored inside was hatred towards people that had done things to me. Once I let that go, and I did that for a specific reason, when I let that go, I was able to lighten up my whole entire energy field, and we showed that in the first 2 minutes of the movie, the prologue, before and after, what happened when I let that stuff go. It's pretty you know, dramatic, which is the good stuff of film.
Yes, it is extremely dramatic. I did a lot of this work with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and a great many people who had a terminal diagnosis.
Yeah.
And who suddenly realized if they didn't deal with it, they weren't going to get a chance to deal with it.
It really this comes down
it.
To feeling.
It tick, tick, tick. But why wait till then? And that's really what I took away from my training with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was, why wait until you get a terminal diagnosis?
Yeah. We have that in our trailer. Exactly. We have that in our trailer. Why wait? You know, your wake-up call. Does it happen to you, or do you choose to wake up without it happening, you know, in that diagnosis or that, you know, job loss or that relationship breakup and the tower experience?
Yes. Yes, and this, you know, we're not blaming anyone who has that kind of experience. It's very common because life makes sure that we pay attention to what we need to pay attention to. But what we're saying is, and I think what you're saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that we don't have to wait to be hit over the head.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. We don't, and it's choice. It's a choice now.
It's all about choice. It has always all been about choice. And you are one of the voices that are reminding us that it's always about choice, and that any time we play the victim, it's non-authentic. This is what I think might be disturbing. You said people are disturbed by your anger about what happened to you, but that anger is anger that is not the anger of a victim.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I love how you get this. Yay!
Right. This is the anger of a woman who says, I am now in charge.
Exactly, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was going on a limb, because a lot of people are uncomfortable with that intensity of emotion. And we went back and forth. In fact, with my film crew, we took that scene out and we put it in and we took it out. And we left it in the long term, because my message is that, you know, I am not a victim of anything. And when I realized that, you know, why I selected this experience in the first place as a soul before I ever came here was so that I could learn and grow, that no one could ever take my power away from me. And to be, you know, perfectly clear, I had experienced a lot of intense sexual abuse in my childhood. And when I could come through and show up as authentically in the film as I did, saying no one can take my power away from me, then I was authentically, you know, whole and happy. And it's a small part of the film. There's a lot of other stories in there, but that second chapter of the film where I express that, there's people who are okay, who are comfortable with that, and they get it. There's a lot of people that this is on the edge, and those are the people I love to interact with, and there's some that just get up and leave. And for me, that's a good film where you've got that whole, that mix of those three.
Right. You have a little something for everybody, shall we say.
Yes, I do.
It is very strong medicine, and we are not all equally at the place where it's appropriate.
Yeah, well, I would just love to hear from you. What do you do when you got some people who are not quite ready for that? Because I'm still having a little, you know, I'm a little uncertain ground there, because people are drawn to my film for a reason, but they're not all ready for that medicine, as you call it.
Well, I run a live-in apprenticeship program where we tell women beforehand, what we're going to do is we're going to put you through the ringer. We're going to stress you. We're going to tell you what's going on right to your face. We're not going to pull any punches. We're going to be what looks like really rude to you. I had an apprentice who left this spring, and she tried to get the other apprentice who was with her at the time to leave at the same time, and she said, you know, don't you understand, Susan is just, you know, just totally, you know, beating you down and telling you terrible things about yourself and, you know, making you out to be a monster, and she's just doing this to get your power. And the other woman said, no, she's not. And the first woman, after she had been gone for a month, wrote and said, oh my gosh, I'm out here in the world now, and I suddenly see in myself all the things you saw in me.
Yeah.
And I see how frightened I was of the truth of those things, and how I wanted to make you into a monster because you had the courage to tell me about these things. It's called being a shaman, Rona.
Oh, yeah. Well, that I can feel
and
that.
There is,
exactly.
And there, yes, and there is no thanks for your work. We don't do this work to be popular. We don't do this work because we think people are going to think we're swell. Some people do, and that's fine. But that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because it is the work of authenticity. And because really, when it comes down to it, it's the only game there is, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I was living
to be
a life.
Yep. And to help others find their own authenticity, what greater thing could we do?
Yep, that is really true. And some people are ready, and some are not. And so it's been an interesting experience, you know, step by step, as I've walked back into my own heart to connect with what's there, and as I say in the film, to just be okay with where I'm at. And you know, some experiences are more intense than others, and I'm a woman who birthed four children into the world without any drugs whatsoever, so I know how to breathe into the intensity.
You do.
Yes.
How old are they now?
Now they are, my youngest is 13 and my oldest son is 23, and he has two children. So,
oh my goodness!
And
congratulations,
yeah.
Grandma.
I understand now why I was so dedicated with my first child. You know, I was going to be present. I was not going to numb out. I was not going to dissociate, because that was what I did in my earlier life as a child. I was not. I dissociated and I left my body. And the doctors and the current medical establishment could not understand it. And I said, I will not have a drug. I don't want anyone in the room telling me about any of your numbing out drugs, because I'm here to be present to my life. And that's the undercurrent of the theme. You know, all the people that tell their stories authentically, we're here to be fully present. And you know, whatever it is. And there is so much more than just the pain and the suffering when I unpack that. And I wasn't living in a very broad range of emotion. I had about, you know, 2 centimeters that I lived in. And when I went through the process of the film, you know, it's immeasurable now. You know, I have moments I just stand outside in my, just in my yard, and with energy and excitement just moving through my body. And sometimes I'm like tired and I just want to watch, you know, hang out and do nothing. So it's about being human, and I love it.
That is really, really beautiful. So suppose that someone is listening in and they say, wow, this sounds really good. I want to get into my authentic self, and I want to have a heart-based journey, but where do I start?
Well, I work with a lot of clients, and it's always, as you know, meeting them where they are. And if someone is confounded by this energy of the heart, we just started making some physical contact with the heart, you know, just putting our hand, you know, putting the hand on the heart. And you know, you can initially close your eyes and start to feel and breathe into the heart and feel what's there. And a lot of people will say, where this is new, they say, I don't feel anything. And so then, you know, we need to really focus on what I like to do is what's around the heart. There's an actual organ, the pericardium, that's a sac that protects the heart. And it's interesting, when you go into the pericardium analogy, that there's something protecting your heart, then people say, oh, yeah, there's a hardness, or there's a spikiness. And I had some lady tell me, well, it's like a basement. It smells sort of musty in here.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
So you just sort of, with analogy sometimes, that works with women, you know, walking into the heart. Now men are a little bit different. And, you know, I have the privilege of having Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's an expert on the neurochemistry of the brain and how things interact. And he says women and men interact very differently. With men, you have to use a little different technique. But it's really just, you know, sometimes figuring out what's a person's comfort and safety zone in the heart and starting to feel it. Then I figured out lately, a lot of people who have had a trauma, if you have them close their eyes, guess what? They exit the body right away and they dissociate.
That's right. Yes.
So sometimes we have to say, you know, keep your eyes open and focus on a nice picture and something that you like, or just the room you're in, and so they don't dissociate out of their body when they're trying to connect with their heart. That was, for me, a pretty big recent revelation.
That sounds very critically important, that this is, we're not doing something that takes us away and into fantasy, but we're doing something that focuses us and brings us more in touch with reality.
Well, it's where the action is, as one of our contributors, Greg Braden, says. The heart is the most powerful organ in terms of the signal that gets measured from the body. And if we were in the same room together, my heartbeat would be registering in your brainwaves. And then we were hooked up to machinery, they could find that. And we would be in training, you know, coming up with the same smooth heart rate rhythm. And it's just fascinating. So we just stay in the body is wonderful for most of the experiences we have day to day. Now, I love meditation. I love going out of the body and dream world work, but really to where I make my most impact in the world, you know, with other people, is when I'm in my body, fully in my heart.
Yes. Yes, I hear that. And I think that that's true for most of us, and that it's what we are yearning for is a heart-based experience with others. So it's very exciting that you are offering this to people and supporting men and women very directly in making this particular, would you say that I'm exaggerating to call it a leap of faith?
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, because it's the zone of the unknown. You know, we know how to be rewarded and live in the mind. That happened very early on when we went into the school system, if not before, where we were rewarded for our ideas and our ability to repeat concepts and ideas, and we were punished if we had feelings. And so, you know, so many of us, as I was myself, stunted at the age of about 5, 6, 7 years old of emotional development, you know, because you just go where you get the most pleasure, which was being rewarded for writing neatly and saying the alphabet and things like that. And so it's the, for us as adults, interestingly enough, it's the world of the unknown. For my grandson who's four, it's absolutely his realm of expert of genius. He knows how to be in his heart.
Yes. Yes, and how exciting to get to be a grandmother who can help him stay there.
Well, it is fun, and in case I get off track a little, he brings me right back.
That's right.
If I'm not in the moment, if I'm not paying attention, but he's chosen to be in this family where he gets to have a lot of mix of different learning styles, and he certainly is a wonderful little being of heart. My little Luca, his name means light. So okay, go get me started on the grandma thing, or I'll get way off track.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. You say that there are three keys to heart-centered learning. Tell us what those three keys are.
Well, throughout the film, we developed the theme of dive in, just what we're talking about, and initially feeling what's inside the heart, and be the willingness to go in and figure out what's there. And for a lot of us, it's not been since we were 5-6 years old, because something happened and we said this isn't a good place to be, so we lived in the realm of the mind. So dive back into the heart and find what's there. And step number two is tune into it a little bit. And I'm not laying around wallowing in the patterns of despair and resentment of the past. I just touch into it, see what's there, and process it a minute and let it go. And then the third part is lighten up, just to lighten, and that happens naturally in some cases, but with my clients individually, we have specific lighten up instructions, which is, we're going to do this heart work, we need to take ourselves out on a little adventure after. I went skydiving as part of the film. I don't say you have to do that in order to lighten up, but, do something fun, something that you enjoy, because we really are repatterning the old ways of the past, which were living from a very narrow frequency. So those themes are explored throughout the film, and we end in the last part with tools and teachings of the heart, which give the audience a lot of different ways, with some of the different speakers of our film, how to do this work, whether it's a meditation or what I offer, a 360-degree review, or many other things, so that you can really live connected in the heart for whatever works for you. It's different for every person, but we do our best to offer a lot of different tools for people to start this heart-based journey.
So tell us how we can find the movie. Is it our local movie theater?
Well, right now we are just, we can purchase the DVD online at sacredjourneyoftheheart.com, and fairly soon we'll be streaming it. So right now you can order it and buy the DVD for those of us who like to touch and feel something. And then for those of us in the internet cyber world, we'll be streaming the film internationally for the first time coming up on September 9th when we have 20 heart-based speakers getting together for an all-free online telesummit. So a lot of the experts in the film, like Greg Braden and Mary Morrissey, I'm speaking with, and also joining us are Bob Proctor and Dr. John DeMartini from The Secret, and Nick Ortner of Tapping Solutions. So we have a sacredjourneytheheart.com, an all-free event a week long from September 9th to the 13th, and gifts and all kinds of stuff. It's really my passion to help people, find the tools that work for them. So the film is one thing, this gathering of 20 world-renowned experts on the heart is just another way of doing it.
One of the most exciting things that's happened to me recently was talking to a cardiologist, a heart specialist in medicine, and to have this cardiologist tell me that at a recent conference there was actually a presentation on good-hearted people and how it is that good-hearted people survive heart surgery better.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Yeah.
So this is a theme that we are really developing, and I'm hoping that we are gonna get this one worldwide.
Well, that's my goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that your passion is going to ignite lots and lots and lots of other people to truly live from their hearts, understanding that the universe is a place filled with endless love and endless bliss.
It is, and you can't feel that with your heart shut down, and that's why we call our online event The Science and Art of Opening Your Heart. To feel that endless love and endless bliss, you've got to take a risk and dive in and open your heart, because, you know, without that, you know, you're just going to be guaranteed you'll stay where you are. But opening your heart, as you know, it's this blissful state, you know, not in, that you just expand and synchronicities happen and all kinds of, you know, wonderful things evolve from that open-hearted space.
So if somebody wants to actually work with you, say, I think you do one-on-one work with people?
I do. I do through my individual coaching and counseling website is modernmastery.com, which is just like the two words, Modern Mastery. And I do, you know, whatever. I have a lot of things that I offer to my clients because I love meeting people for wherever they are. You know, if someone is really into, you know, metaphysical connections, we'll do all kinds of things, past life, tarot, numerology. If people want to just manage their day-to-day stress, I'm certified with the Institute of Heart Math to deal with that, and Colin Tipping's radical forgiveness practice, I do that. So we oftentimes just have a 15-20 minute.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that 90-second? Is that audible to you?
No, I didn't hear that.
Okay, it's a voice just came on and said that we have 90 seconds left in the show, probably down to 80 now. So you got 90 seconds to tell them what you want to tell them, and then they're going to shut us off. There's no
Right. Well, connect with me on modernmastery.com, and I do lots of individual sessions. But most importantly, join our free online telesummit, sacredjourneyoftheheart.com. You'll see the telesummit, sign up, and get all kinds of free bonus gifts, and you'll find exactly what your heart's desire is. I've got 20 speakers and wonderful topics and lots of free gifts, and just join us on this wonderful event. And I'm so grateful that you've had me on your show, and it's been a joy. I love learning from people who get it, who get the message. So obviously you're a heart-based woman.
Thank you, Rona Prince. Find her at modernmastery.com and find her movie at Sacred Journey of the Heart. com. This
Excellent.
Is Susan Weed wishing you green blessings, thanking you for helping us to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and to return power back into our hearts. Good night, all. Good night, Rhonda Prince.
Bye. Thanks.